welcome to That's Not Proper, and I'm your host, Corey Asuncion. Being a strong woman is one thing. Being a strong woman working in government and politics is a whole other ballgame. Called a firecracker lawmaker in the city of Milpitas, my guest today, Councilwoman Karina Dominguez, has dedicated her career to public service with a people over politics platform. Thank you so much, Karina, for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be part of your show, especially because it's in Milpitas.
Yes.
It definitely feels home. So thank you.
Yeah, you are my first Milpitas guest at all. Everyone else that I've had on has been, you know, out of state, out of country, out of the area. And, you know, it's sometimes hard because Milpitas is smaller. Not everybody understands the whole podcast thing. But I was super excited that you were open to chatting with me. And you have been a topic of conversation in our home. You're one of the ones where I've told my partner and my kids, we need to watch her. Your passion for people is evident. It shines. It's genuine. And it's something that has really drawn me into paying attention to you. And we're going to talk a little bit about politics and government today. But really what I want to talk about is a little bit about being a woman of color in politics. And, you know, talking to the women and girls who are growing up now, especially in our city and in our state, and letting them know that this is something that they can do and the importance of their voice in these things. But before we get into that, I want to get a little bit of history about you, because I really want our listeners to understand who you are and where you've come from and what you've come from and what brought you here to this point today. So tell me a little bit about Karina.
Yeah, absolutely. I love to share our story and our journey, because I tell people I am definitely not the person that said I'm going to be a politician, right? 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I would even say not even 3 years ago. You would have told me in 2017 that you're going to become the next vice mayor or an elected official in Milpitas. I would have said, yeah, right. That's not me. The reason that I say that is because my upbringing really brought me to the world of what I call the world of public service. I, at a very, very young age, my dad used to be involved in organizing at our local church. I was born in the east side of San Jose in one of the most low-income areas until this day, in a barrio called Sal Si Puedes. And so if you translate that into English, it means get out if you can. So you could just imagine some of the challenges that not only myself at a very young age experienced and saw around gangs and drugs and inability to get quality access to healthcare and education, and not even really be able to see people like me in different kind of positions. And I remember, you know, the fair question that they ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I remember saying, I want to be a secretary. I want to be a lunch lady, because those are the people that I felt were around me, and not to degrade these positions, but never in my mind did I think, what was it with someone being in the C-suite? I didn't even know what that was until honestly, maybe a couple years ago. And so being able to see somebody that looks like me, that speaks my language. Many people don't know this, but English is my second language. So my first language was Spanish, and I was in special education when I was younger. So a lot of people don't know that. It's not something I share. And the reason I think that I didn't share it as much was because there was a while that I felt shame for it. And I look back now and my parents didn't have the ability to, or the time to advocate for better services, for better testing. And unfortunately, all of that did influence the classes that I took, the schools that I attended. Unfortunately, my parents had to work 2 to 3 jobs just to make sure that we had food at the table and we had a roof over our head. So I come from a very, very humble beginning, but I come from a family that's hardworking. And both of my parents worked in the farm. And many, many times they came to Milpitas. So Milpitas was a farmland long, many, many years ago. Apricots, my mom remembers, and till this day, we still have one factory of apricot farm left in Milpitas. And my mom used to come here a lot. And that is how my mom immigrated to the United States, was through the Braceros program along with my dad. So they follow the agriculture into California, into Tracy. They landed in San Jose as a home. But my dad always, when we bought the house in Milpitas, my dad was like, I remember when I used to pick the farms here, I used to say, oh, I wish I could live here. But at the time, the only place he could afford to buy a house was on the east side of San Jose. And so the east side of San Jose is where I was born and raised. I spent my grade school years there. I was very lucky to have a teacher who really changed my life, Mrs. Clay. Till this day, I still keep in touch with her. She actually has some deep roots in Milpitas. She knows a lot of people here. And Mrs. Clay was this very nice, loving, tender, African-American, bold, independent woman. And I remember vividly in fourth grade when the question comes, what do you want to be when you grow up? And at the time, I remember I wanted to be a veterinarian. And I remember saying, oh, I want to be a veterinarian. And she hands me this eraser. And at the time we had chalkboards. So some kids now may not know what that is, but we had chalkboards. So there was a class duty at the end of the day that you got the responsibility to clean the chalkboards. And I remember cleaning the chalkboards and she was writing that she was going to do class president. She was going to start electing students to help her guide some of the things that we wanted in class. And so she was going to do a class president, a vice president, secretary, and a treasurer. And I remember cleaning the chalkboard and I didn't even think of like, that could be me, right? Something as simple as a class president. And she said, you're going to run, right? And I was like, run? I don't even know what that means, Mrs. Clay. And she said, yeah, you were going to ask your peers, who do they think? And then they're going to vote. And then we're going to have these representatives that are going to represent our classroom for the fifth grade. And I remember looking at her like, okay, that's awesome. But never in my wildest dreams did I think that that could be me. Mm-hmm. And she was really one that pushed me to do it. And I remember my first election that I won was in fifth grade. And from then I didn't stop. I continued to advocate for my community in the Mayfair area. I continued to be very involved in grassroots movements with nonprofits such as PAC. I'm the only child, so I'm also if you know, if you're a second gen, if your first language is in English, you know that you become the translator for your home at a very, very young age. So my dad used to work in construction. And at the time we used to have these answering machines, we did not have GPSs. And I remember he was getting sent a lot to like the Livermore, Sacramento area to do construction projects as a laborer. And I was his translator. You know, I was doing homework and I was translating the maps for my dad. And when he would get lost, he would call. We had landlines. We didn't have cell phones. And so all those experiences really helped me understand that I lived in the community that was very low income. And I remember being in a PAC and neighborhood association meeting and thinking, why do all these people want to come and fix us? There's nothing wrong here. And the reason I thought that was because I had love. I had community love. You know, I had an ice cream man person that sold ice cream next door, and he made sure that we were always watched for, that we were fed. If our parents couldn't afford food for the neighborhood kids, he would take us in. We had teachers like Ms. Clay that really helped support us and guide us into becoming GATE students and coming out of the special education system. We had neighborhood associations who brought in funders like the Hewlett-Packards of the world, who invested millions of dollars into neighborhoods. But yet, as I grew older, we still saw the same issues. Same exact thing. The gang banger waiting for you at the corner of the bridge to ask you, what do you bang? What do you claim? Mm-hmm. We still, as students, had a gap to technology. We had a gap to access to books. While people that lived on the other side of town, they didn't face these challenges. Mm. So as I grew older, I started running to become the student body president in middle school and high school. And in between then, I really became the voice for my community at a very young age. And it was simple. It came out of the thought that we are the people in this community. And if you want to put funding in this community, then ask me what I want. Why are you assuming that this place isn't good for me? Yes, we may have challenges. We may have some challenges that other neighborhoods may not see, but that doesn't make us bad people. And if people want change, then why don't you teach me how to make that change? Because at a very young age, I was already advocating for adults in my community. And so that's where the passion for community really comes from, is that voice and empowering other people to find their voice, because I've seen how many people have been stripped away from it. And this started when I was young, right? So, and unfortunately, it's something that I still see now, and it's actually what brought me into politics.
You know, I'm watching you and I can see, not all the listeners can see this, but I can see you're emotional right now. And so as I'm watching you and I'm listening to you, even more so, it reinforces for me this passion you have for people. And so when I hear your platform, People Over Politics, it again reinforces that. You know, out of curiosity, when you were younger and you said you got to a point where you were seeing that people wanted to make change and you wanted them to talk to you because you had already been a voice for the community, do you feel like you were listened to?
I believe that, yes, ultimately I was listened to, but I was listened to in a group, not as an it started as an individual, right? I had Ms. Clay who listened to me, and then I had school board members who listened. But when we came together as one community and the voices multiplied and they came as one, then that's when real effective change started to happen. I care very deeply about people. And I think as a woman of color in particular, when you feel that crack in your voice because it comes out of your heart, people automatically think you're emotional. She's too emotional. I've gotten that so many times at City Hall by some of our colleagues even, where they say she's too emotional. And then people start thinking, well, it's not proper to be in elected office and be emotional. Because the assumption is that you're not going to be able to make logical decisions because of your emotion. And that is something that I really want to break and disrupt, especially with women. Because, and even with men, I remember once it already happened, we had one of our colleagues and he got really emotional, just like I did. I could sense the crack in his throat because he was very passionate. He could feel this experience. But I could also sense that it was uncomfortable. And I even said, it's okay to feel. And I want people to know that it is okay to feel. Emotions are something human and beautiful if you execute them correctly.
Right. You and I talked about that previously a little bit, and I'd like to talk about that here now as well. You know, just reiterating what you just said, that a lot of times people, especially when you're a woman, if a woman has an emotion and it is expressed, she is called too emotional, too much, hysterical, my favorite one, you know, and so we have this idea that if she has those things, she's not capable.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we can, what I'm loving right now that I'm seeing in society, despite all the other crap that's going on in society right now, but is that there is a movement towards embracing our feelings and our emotions, especially in men and young boys. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea is that men and boys don't have them, and just women and young girls do. And that's inaccurate. Mm-hmm. They do. They've just been told they have to suppress them and that it's not proper to express them and show them. The conversation you and I had had before, we were talking about a very specific situation where you had expressed feeling and emotion, and you had expressed that maybe it wasn't the best thing or whatever. And I said, well, here's my deal, is when I saw you in the city of Milpitas expressing emotion, aggravation, anger, whatever those emotions were that you were feeling at the time, what I saw was something I could relate to. If I look at someone who is in charge of governing my city, my state, my nation. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like they can feel me, that they don't understand my struggle, mm-hmm. my emotion, my grief, my joy. I cannot connect to that. Mm-hmm. They might be fabulous and be really good at their job. But if I can't connect, I don't want you there. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that you bring that up, because I think a lot of people need to understand that these emotions, those are human emotions. We are given these by whomever you believe in, God, creator, you know, spirit, whatever right. it is. We are emotional beings that have a need to connect. Mm-hmm. And even in something like politics and public service, if you can't connect to your people, if you can't feel their struggle, their pain, their joy, how could you possibly be doing something that is motivated towards their benefit? Mm-hmm. And I love that you said that, because it really, really is important to me. And it needs to be something I truly believe is at the top of the agenda mm-hmm. for raising up communities when they're young. They need to be able to properly express these emotions. And I do think it's important. Let's note that properly is really important yeah. because there's something I tell my kids, anger isn't wrong.
Yes.
You know, joy isn't wrong. Sorrow isn't wrong. Grief isn't wrong. It's what you do with it Absolutely. That could eventually turn a little awry. Expressing those things and feeling that, like I said, I'm watching you and I saw you at the beginning of this conversation. I can see there's emotion there. And that's important to me because I can connect to that. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I think it's really important for folks to understand that my passion comes from personal experience, but also from being empathetic and sympathetic. Those are skills that not every politician, I say that in quotes, because I always feel I'm an advocate. I'm an advocate at heart. If you ask me, are you an advocate or a politician? I'll say, I'm an advocate. I am not a politician. Mm-hmm. In fact, it took me a really long time to even accept, like, wow, I'm a politician by title, right? Mm-hmm. But because of all the assumptions and most negative, unfortunately, we live in a society right now where politics is not something people want to say. It's the most positive thing. It's negative. Right. It's like, oh, I don't do politics. I often hear that. Mm-hmm. I don't do politics. Then I ask, well, do you pay rent? Do you pay the water bill? Do you live, do your children go to school? And when they say yes, I said, well, congratulations, you do politics. Now, the choice is, do you want to be actively doing politics and making choices for yourself and in making sure you're part of that change? Or do you want someone else to make the decision without even you asking you what you want? And it goes back to my very young experience of people coming into my neighborhood saying, I think this is best for you, without asking me what's best for my community. And we see that even now, where yeah. being able to be sympathetic and have, you know, sympathy for other people is very different than having empathy, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's being able to walk in somebody else's shoes and feel that experience to the core, from the beginning to an elected official, a policymaker. Because that is when change happens. Because if you can't move a policymaker to feel your experience, the chances of that policymaker being influenced by money, by backdoor deals, by status, by the likes on Facebook, that is when it becomes dangerous. Because no longer is that elected official doing things for the people, they're doing things for themselves. And that is what got me to run for office. You know, not a lot of people know this, but, and I shared it at the Women's March, but the media didn't pick it up. But the reason that I ran for office in 2017 was because I've worked in politics for a long time with different elected officials. And my last experience in an elected office, I saw something wrong that happened with one of my colleagues. And this staff member was raped, and she went through the process, proper HR process, and you could Google it and find the information for yourself. But to really feel her experience and be part of the system as a staff member and really think, wow, this is happening again. How is this happening here? This isn't supposed to happen here. Of course, the media is not going to pick it up. No one's going to talk about it. This individual is going to go out and get standing ovations. But you're thinking, behind the closed door, what did you really do for the staff member?
Right.
And despite if they knew, didn't know, or what happened, you have power to change systems. That's what you do every day. But yet you couldn't change the system in your own office. And that is what triggered me to run for office with the Me Too movement. When I saw this staff member in 2017, I said, no more. I don't want nothing to do with politics. I've done my time because I saw the most disgusting situation that I could ever see and just blatantly in my face of how things happen when no one's watching. That I just felt there's nothing more that I could do. And so I took a little break, and then the Me Too movement started. And the movement in Milpitas started with our city manager. And then suddenly I was part of a water task force, and then I got kicked out of the water task force after I had already submitted. It was the funniest thing. I remember I was part of the water task force, and I had submitted my resignation letter because my mom was going through some health issues. And this was all at the same time that my coworker was going through her situation. And I remember getting a text, and they were like, you're part of the agenda. And I'm like, for what? And they said, yeah, you're part of this. Your name is on the city agenda for termination on the water task force. And I said, I quit. I put in my resignation to our city manager. And so at the time, many of you know this, the story with our city manager. So now there's no surprise on why maybe that letter didn't get to the council. But I found it so disrespectful at the time that I didn't get a letter telling me, hey, you're going to be part of the agenda. Do you want to come so you could give us your feedback? I found it so disrespectful that the chair of the water task force didn't call me and say, hey, we haven't heard from you. Where are you? Then maybe she would have known that I put my resignation letter months before, and maybe the city manager didn't give it to you. But I want people to understand that situation was also a motivator to run for office here in the city of Milpitas, because that's with my knowledge and my experience, I knew I just wanted to learn more about our water source. And unfortunately, my mom got sick, and so I couldn't continue with that commitment. But what I want people to understand is that these decisions influence people. And ironically, this decision almost cost me my current job, because unfortunately, the council made a decision, and it was to terminate me. It came into light in the Mercury News, and that's how I found out about it. The final decision was the Mercury News. And then, you know, the blurt from the council member. And I was like, whoa, you guys didn't even give me time to deal with my mom who was sick and say, hey, I'm going to have to go to this council meeting because I have to talk on my behalf. Mm-hmm. A decision was made without telling me. I literally found out about it minutes before by a council member that I knew. I felt so violated in my own city while I'm going to work and listening to the process that my coworker is going through because she got raped. So when I'm seeing these backdoor deals happening, not only in my personal life, in a city that I live in, but also in my work life, I started realizing, what in the heck is going on in Milpitas? Definitely there's structure issues, there's leadership issues. There is systems not in place that are giving more power to this person. So I started paying attention a little bit more to politics, and we all know what happened with that story. But I share this story because when I'm feeling it, any situation that crosses my path, I like to feel it because it gives me passion to do something about it.
Right.
And it's like what you said, right? You can't just be angry. You can't just yell. And I had a situation in Milpitas that, you know, the vice mayor situation. And it took a lot to do the video after. And I wasn't personally angry. I wasn't like, oh, what did they do to me? I was more angry that I saw this system happen behind closed doors, mm-hmm. being an elected member of a body, and we totally did not follow an agenda protocol to, for what? That was the question. Why is this happening? It was political.
It was almost literally behind closed doors. The way that went, went down. It wasn't even, you could put quotation marks, but it was almost literally behind closed doors, the way that whole situation went down.
Yes, and you look at the agenda and you're like, wait a minute. This is why I ran for office. And this is why I came to be in the seat. So things like this wouldn't happen anymore. What happened to procedures? What happened to following the agenda items? I clearly knew something was different, where I wish maybe we would have just had a conversation, right? Like, hey, this is what's happening. Maybe you shouldn't be vice mayor because we want to share the position. If you would have came to me with that, I would have been like, absolutely, let's do it.
You know what's crazy? I don't necessarily know how everything works. So I'm a layman in that sense. And so I remember when you ran and you were elected in 2018, and it was a resounding gong, you know, your election to vice mayor of the city of Milpitas. And it wasn't, what was it, 6 months later this all went down?
Yeah, it was about seven months later. The final decision was in January, but it was introduced like in October or something along those lines.
I don't get it. So my whole thing was, wait a second. She was elected. She was chosen. This is who we picked. And again, I'm a noob and I'm a layman. So I still to this day am very confused as to how we can just go in and say, so we're going to remove this from Karina's title. Give me just real briefly a little bit about that, because I have a feeling that some fellow Milpitians are going to wonder the same thing about this.
Yes. You know, the vice mayor role, I want to clarify, the vice mayor role is a very political title. It's always been in any city you go to. It's a title. It's the definition of responsibilities varies in different places. In the city of Milpitas, it's an appointed position. So this position is appointed by the mayor or council majority. And this is where people missed it, or council majority.
Okay.
Before my time, there was members here and there was probably political scuffles happening, and you could just type it and
you can Google some of those.
Because in politics, this is something I want to disrupt and I don't like at all. Politics is very team and clicky, right? Mm-hmm. It's the minute you come in as a new member, someone wants to say you're part of my team. Right. And
high school.
You're my team. You can't talk. It's really you can't talk to them because you're part of my team. And if you talk to them, you're not part of the group anymore. So it's a very, in my perspective, something we shouldn't have in government entities, but it happens everywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the choice of the people in 2018 was to elect me, which I became a council member. But the interesting part was 20 minutes literally after I took my oath of office, I get appointed to be the vice mayor.
Okay, so now the appointment of vice mayor was not made by the people. It was made by the council members and the mayor.
Yes. And so this is where everyone missed the narrative. And of course, the media picks up only the things that are going to make the paper.
Well, yeah, whatever sensational.
But what happened really, what I think, blatantly, and I've never shared this with anyone, but this is what I think. Of how this all happened, I think that if you look at the papers, and the fact is that this current mayor needed a majority. He was always two votes for one reason or the other. I don't even want to get to that because I wasn't around, so I don't know. But you all know there was definitely tension, and he's always short that extra vote. And unfortunately, politics turns personal. So even if it's a good idea, the ideas are not going because people just don't like him or whatnot at the time.
Right.
So the Mercury News, the Milpitas beat, everyone was sensationalizing how the mayor was going to get his third vote with me. And even if you Google it now, you'll see when we, the day of election, even there was an article that said the mayor gets his third vote, council majority. And I remember thinking, okay, I know they work together. That's 1-2. Who's the third vote? Me.
You.
And I felt like, why is everyone saying I'm his third vote? I was elected by the people to represent the people. And I came to disrupt this political tradition of majority. I'm independent. I ran a grassroots campaign by the people, for the people. And I'm not nobody's third vote. I am the people's vote. And I said that very clearly from day one, but it wasn't loud enough. Because everyone saw, oh, the mayor appointed Karina as the vice mayor. But it was...
So you're part of his clique.
It's part of his clique.
Got it.
But what really could have happened, this is what could have happened. Let's say that the mayor, because the mayor had already said he was going to appoint Carmen Montano, former vice mayor of Milpitas. Right? That was like, he was, she's it. I don't know what happened that...
I do remember that.
Right, that it flopped and then it's me. But this is what I think happened. I think that there was personal political scuffles happening that weren't mine. I come in as a newbie. Everyone's trying to get me to their team. They're like, whoa, she's going to love the vice mayor role. Let's give it to her because that is going to be like, wow, you're part of my team. We care about you. So we're going to give her the vice mayor role. Who's going to give it to her? Because that's what the media is going to pick up. Remember, politicians think this way. Who's going to give it to her? So I could be like, wow, look at me. I, the new person, woman of color, vice mayor. The mayor wants to give it to me because he wants to say, hey, I'm the mayor. I selected this person. But he had already promised it to Carmen. How does he get out of it? Well, that's my plan. My theory is that, remember, it's appointed or council majority. I think that the other two council members were going to nominate me to be the vice mayor. So the mayor wouldn't have the ability to say, I chose Karina. Because guess what? You need three votes, right? So let's say that the mayor wouldn't have chosen me. Let's say the mayor would have chosen Carmen like he originally wanted. Another council member could have recommended me and said, I recommend Karina or I recommend somebody else. And then it goes for a vote. I could have probably been stuck in a very unfortunate situation, which I'm glad I wasn't, because I probably would have abstained, honestly, which would have been two and two, the teams. Remember, you have team A with two votes, team B with two votes. Guess who would have been the third vote for themselves?
Me.
So that would have overturned whatever mayor, the wishes of the mayor. I think the mayor figured it out. He didn't want to seem like he didn't have control over his council at the beginning of his term because of all of the drama that has happened before. So he thought that by giving me the vice mayor role, not only is he naming the new vice mayor, I tell people perception is reality in politics. Let's make the reality a perception to reality that we selected her. But guess what? I don't really like her. I don't really want her. She disrupted politics. She wasn't supposed to run for office. It wasn't what I was hearing in 2018 was it's not your turn. You haven't done your time in Milpitas. Which was bizarre to me because I've been living here for over 15 years and raised my daughter here. Then I heard you're not qualified enough because you're a single parent, you're a single mom. Then I heard it all. Stay in your lane. People are going to come after you. People are going to get you fired. And I've seen it all in politics, including fair statements in that nature. So I ran in 2018 to represent the people and change these structures. So what you guys saw in January, I feel, is really what would have happened the day that I got sworn in. because it was a very tick for tack decision. It was be part of my team, do what I want. You know, and I just don't know if anyone did research on me, because anyone that knows me, they would tell you, Karina is a people person. She will go with the people. She's not afraid and intimidated by anyone. And she's going to make decisions that are fair and equitable and is not influenced by anybody in power. In fact, it's quite the opposite.
So it was kind of a situation where they went, oh, crap, we screwed up. We got to yank this one.
How do we yank it? We take the vice mayor role again and make her feel this little. But what happened shortly after, to come back to the question of what was that video after, that is the reaction you'll get from me when I see inequality happen before my eyes, where it's so blatant that we're seeing it now with the movements around us. We're seeing the, unfortunately, the disproportion of access to everything right now, especially during COVID-19, where people are getting frustrated with the systems, and when they're starting to engage and activate in ways we've never seen before. We're seeing movements like the civil rights movement, because people are so tired of seeing this in their face and politicians telling them, it's going to change. It's going to change. Go to our meetings, do this. And nothing happens.
Nothing's happening.
And so that fury, that people, that disbelief of, wow, power really does that, is what Milpitian saw in me in January with that video where I shot it right after. Because during the meeting, I am a person that I believe City Hall is the home of the people. I will never disrespect City Hall, because that's the home of Milpitians. It's like someone coming to my home. We'll never do that. And I was very mindful that everyone was watching me. And I was very mindful that I wanted Milpitians to know that I wasn't upset at the decision itself against me as a person, that I was upset against the decision that blatantly happened behind closed doors, and it was a personal attack on a woman of color, and nobody stood up and said anything in the home of the people. And that is what broke my heart outside, where it was like, wow, I ran for office to change the systems, and this literally happened in our face right now. But it was spun with shared governance. And now I think it's now at a point where I'll be very honest, because we're in the middle of a pandemic, I don't ever want people to forget it, because it's important for people to know that that is politics. Closed door deals still happen. We still have issues in our systems that we are all working towards fixing. And I do believe the pandemic has brought all five of us to a very different place from January, and I will be the first to admit that. I would do anything for Milpitas, and I do believe just the other day, Mayor Rich Tran and I exchanged a text to try to do a fundraiser for the fire victims. So I will be the first to text them and say, hey, we have an idea. Do you want to be part of it? Which is what I did. Because I also want people to know that we are changing politics. And when I say we, our Office of Councilmember Karina Dominguez, when you elected me in 2018, I promised that I was going to disrupt and do politics differently. What we saw in January is what we see in politics all the time. It's what led me to run. So how am I going to react to change it? Many of you guys have seen that the person that I honestly collaborate the most with is Vice Mayor Bob Nunez. The thing with politics is that you can't take it personal. You absolutely can't. The minute you take politics personal, I personally have seen, is the minute that you need to start exiting the space, because that's when you'll start making irrational decisions because they're personal. You can't do that, especially in the middle of a pandemic. And so I feel I have grown as a woman of color, as an elected official. I mean, all that happened in my first year. You know, it's funny. Yeah.
It's been a crazy year.
It's crazy.
For sure.
You know, in politics, there's a, what politicians know, that the first year they get elected, they say that the first year is the year you learn. So you don't really, it's like a job, right? The first year you're learning the structures, you're learning this and that. I always knew that I was going to start working day one because that I already had most of the skill set. It was just learning how the Milpitas way, how do things get done in Milpitas City Hall. But in our first year, I became vice mayor. The vice mayor role got stripped from me. We passed so many policies in that we had campaigned on. We were able to form strong partnerships with our colleagues and our staff at City Hall. Then we have the great mall. If many of you guys remember, we had the active shooter. Thank God it wasn't anything that happened in the active shooter, but everyone thought it was. I was a vice mayor at the time. So we dealt with that in the response to the active shooter situation at the Great Mall. And then shortly after, we got the vice mayor position stripped from us. And now we have to recalibrate, right? My birthday happens January 20th. I am a big believer in karma, and whatever energy you put, you get. I am a big believer in that. And so the vice mayor thing happened like the second week or the first week in January. I can't even remember anymore. But my birthday was January 20th. And I remember I said, January 20th, it's kind of like the restart. What are my new goals? What are we going to do? We're going to be people focused. I want four values for our office. Anything we do from now on is going to be around these four values. And so talking with our youth commissioners and in the city of Milpitas and our youth from Milpitas High, we decided that we were going to put all of that energy of feeling not part of the process while being a council member, we were going to put it to empower and ignite our youth, because we wanted this to never, ever to happen to anybody else. I don't ever want anyone to experience what I experienced as the vice mayor. So I feel that it's important for us to teach our youth, because our youth are 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds. Those are going to be our future elected officials. And I want them to understand how policy gets done. Yes, the bike lanes, the things that you could see always gets the media attention. But things that form structures like the rules committee or things like that, that's not like, people don't pay attention to that. Neither does the media.
Right.
And so I want our youth to be empowered. And so that is something we're doing out of our office now. Anything that we do is going to be revolving around educating our community. We want to educate. We want to pull people up. So we're going to start a youth advisory committee that is going to be 50 youth from the city of Milpitas who are going to be like my kitchen cabinet. They're going to be the ones helping me draft policy and come up with ideas for Milpitas. We're also going to do a senior and community advisory committee because we want to represent everybody. It's not just the youth, but I'm very well aware that our seniors bring a lot of wisdom and a lot of knowledge to our office. And so we definitely want to make sure that we're representing and getting that feedback from everybody. So we're definitely going to make sure that we want to empower generations to think that they could be everything they never thought they could be, right? And so we want to make sure that we're empowering for folks. And the last and final thing that we want to make sure that we do is that we listen. And that is the most important thing. For me, that's a value and a skill. And it's not just listening, it's actively listening. What are people saying to me? And just like you observed earlier where you felt my heart and you felt that crinkle in my throat, that's what I want to feel in everyone else, because that is what's going to ignite at least this elected official to make sure that change happens for Milpitians at City Hall. And that's what I promised in 2018.
When you talk about igniting that in someone, my partner and I just this morning were talking about several different things with regards to raising children in this generation and the generation we're from. And what we notice in society as a whole is a lack of love for one another. And when you have that, then you don't care. You don't care what happens to them. And you don't care about the future generations. And you don't care about watching Black people being killed in the streets right now, and you don't care about those things because we lack this love, which is empathy and compassion and the desire to actually hear their story and their desires and their needs, instead of saying, hey, this is what I think you need, because we don't really know. Mm-hmm. And that's just so hugely important. And I'm just thrilled to watch you. And I know that your term, I guess, expires in 2022. Is that correct?
Yes. So our term expires in 2022. So I will not be on the ballot, and I could really focus on the things that we're doing now, like economic recovery for the city of Milpitas, helping our neighbors during some of the most disastrous, challenging times that we've ever seen. So those are the things that our office is a member. I want to focus on making sure that we bring awareness. And you know, I'm so happy that you mentioned love. So I want to make this very, very clear. I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. And my daughter is 20 years old. And one of the things that I always tell her is, from a very, very young age, I've been a single mom since, you know, from a very young age for her. And I've always said this to her, and she remembers till this day, we don't use the word hate in our house. Mm. We use the word dislike or uncomfortable, or I disagree with, but we don't use the word hate. Because I believe that when your heart begins to hate, that is when ineffective change happens, because you're reacting, going back to the emotions. It's okay to feel. But the minute you start reacting from hate, you're reacting in a malicious, what could be a malicious way. And many people wanted me to run for mayor this time around. And I was very clear. I do not hate the mayor in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. Do I dislike what he did to me? Absolutely, because I think it could have been done a lot better. If I was in his position, I would have done it better. But I'm not him. So the level of awareness that I have now, that I've grown in myself as an elected member, has been something I would have not even been able to describe to you, I'll be honest, in January, which is this concept that all five of us have our strengths, all five of us have our weaknesses. We are one team. And some elected bodies don't believe they're a team because they don't pick their teammates. The people do. But I believe we're one team because we're only as strong as our strongest and weak as our weakness. So when we all collectively join forces to react in a space of love, things look so much different. And it's just saying, I accept you for what you bring to the table. I accept you for what you did or didn't do. But how could I make it better? And that's where I'm at right now as an elected official, is how could I make it better with the skill set that I have grown as a council member? How could I make it better as a team and really build a true team for the city of Milpitas? Because we're going to experience some things we have never seen. The economy right now is tanking. Our recovery time is going to take a lot longer. And services, unfortunately, are going to face some very challenging, we're going to face some very challenging decisions in terms of services in the city, because the money is not flowing in the same way it was flowing when we built our budget a year ago. These are all decisions that a team has to put Milpitas families first. We have to. We must. And that, it's going to begin with me. And so I made a hard choice for others, because actually it was pretty easy for myself, which was not to run for mayor. It was to focus on my job as a council member and how could I help Milpitians or those who are coming to Milpitas for help during some of the most devastating times that we will ever face. And I am very honored to have the ability to lead the city and to do things that I never in my life thought I was going to become an elected official and be the voice for the people. I never thought I was going to be leading a city in the worst economic crisis that we have seen, and the devastating fires, earthquakes, and every natural disaster that I feel that Northern California has experienced. We have lived it here in Milpitas, either directly or indirectly. And so that is where we're going to move forward, and we're going to put that love that we have for our city and for every single individual here, and we're going to advocate for them just like they were my family. And the council member, you guys saw the passion, is going to move into action because we can't do less. It's we have to do more. And I think that's going to be a real test to the voters in November, because you get to choose two council members. I do believe the mayor will keep his seat, and I've always said that. And I look forward to working with him, because I will say this publicly again and again. Mayor Rich Tran and I work very differently. And I said that from the day, you could find it in quotes anywhere. The fact is, I've always said we work very differently. But in my heart, I believe we have the same end goal, which is to put Milpitas families first. I truly believe that. Our experiences are very different. And I do believe that there's going to be an opportunity for us to come together to deal with our own personal differences. But I do believe that right now, in the middle of this pandemic, Kim and I are on the same page, which is to put Milpitas families first. And there's nothing that I'm going to do to deviate from that. And if it's handing him what they call that olive branch, then if I would be giving my daughter some advice, I'd just say, just do it, because the end goal is much more important than anything else. And the end goal for me is to make sure that Milpitians have what they need to live in Milpitas, to stay in Milpitas, to keep a job, to sustain their lifestyle in Milpitas, and for Milpitas to continue as a city to provide the city services that we have been providing. And safety is the most ultimate priority for us at this moment. And we need to act as one family. And like in any family, we all have those challenging moments around the kitchen table, right?
Yeah, amen.
So I do believe that that's definitely, it's going to happen. I also believe that as a woman of color, someone told me there's only 2% of women of color in politics who have ever gotten the role of a vice mayor. Or Latinas to even make it to a position in leadership as a council member seat. So I hold that heavy on my shoulders, because I now know that when I go make those school visits, I've gotten little girls that say, I want to be like you. And all they know is that I could influence the playgrounds in their nearest park. When I ask them, what do you want to see in the playground? They're like, wow, you could change the playgrounds? I want to be like you.
Yeah.
It's like, all right.
That's great. Well, so thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate you. I can't even begin to tell you. I wish we were live and in person and I would hug you, but we can't do that. So hug from across the city. If you could share with my listeners where they can get in contact with you, if they have any questions, concerns, you know, fellow Milpitians, what, you know, how they can contact you, that would be great. Share that with us. And I will also include that information in the show notes.
Awesome. That would be great. So definitely, we are on all platforms now. We are on Facebook, on Twitter, on Snapchat, and soon TikTok. And the reason for that is because we have a youth advisory committee who's showing us how to do all this great stuff. I also want to invite folks to like our Facebook page. Right now, that is the prime portal that we're using for communication, as well as our newsletter. So please, please visit our website, which is votecarinadominguez.com. You're going to be able to subscribe to make sure that you get the latest and greatest in our new newsletter, which I'm really excited. And always, you could call me. I'm a phone call away at 669-228-1623. Those are the best ways to get a hold of me. But I always tell people, just call me. That is my mobile personal number, and I always get it. So I definitely want to make sure that Milpitians feel I'm accessible and only a text message away.
Perfect. And again, I will include all that information in the show notes, direct links, and the phone number. And one more time, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate you doing this podcast.
Thank you so much for listening into this week's episode of That's Not Proper. If you are interested in connecting with City of Milpitas Councilwoman Karina Dominguez, please check out her website, votecarinadominguez.com. I'm going to be including her phone number and social media contact pages in the show notes, and you can check those out there. In addition, please remember to come back next week and listen to next week's episode of That's Not Proper.